Welcome, everybody. We are back for another episode of your favorite Facebook Live show, Convince Me. I am your host and multiple champion of this show, Andy Rutherford, joined as always by my two esteemed co-hosts, Mr. Casey Elrod and Mr. Brian Bennett. Gentlemen, how's it going tonight?
I am stunned that this show has hit rock bottom quite like this.
Ah, I see what you did there. Mr. Bennett.
I'm awesome. How's it going?
It's going very well. And a lot of the reason why it's going very well is for two reasons. Number one, I'm excited about this topic tonight. This is my wheelhouse. This is what I was made to discuss. But second of all, I'm excited because of everything you guys have done in the last week. The numbers on the Facebook page, the numbers on the Instagram page, to go from where we were 2 months ago when we started this to now, in the grand scheme of things, our numbers now aren't blowing the doors off. We're not on the verge of our own TV show or anything. But the growth we've had in about 2 months is far more than I ever thought we would get. Gentlemen, I believe we've probably peaked, but this may be the beginning of something bigger. What do you guys think?
So you're telling me we're not getting a $100 million deal from Spotify like Joe Rogan just got? Is that what you're telling me?
I mean, not in the next month.
Okay. I'm not going to roll anything out at this point.
This show hasn't dropped yet. This show's going to be fun. But we're going to do a little house cleaning here up front, tell you guys some of the exciting stuff we've got coming. We talked about it from the start. This started as something because we were bored during quarantine. And we said eventually we were going to make it a podcast. Well, now is eventually. This will be the first episode that will drop as a podcast later this week. Not sure the exact day, but be sure to watch our Facebook page. We'll keep you guys updated. Make sure when it does drop, go listen to it again. Go subscribe. Go rank us. Go like us. Whatever your platform is, make sure to show us some love. Because if you show us love, we can keep doing this, hopefully till we run out of things to talk about. So keep posted. There's a podcast coming this week. There's a YouTube page coming possibly next week. So keep your eyes peeled. We are moving up in the world, because we're going to go as high as we can before we go crashing down, which, hopefully is not next week, but you never know, in these kind of things. But tonight, it took us 2 months, but we finally get to talk a little bit of wrestling, and I am excited. We're talking about the era that at least myself and Bennett grew up very heavily in, and I know he did because he did it with me at one or the other's house every Monday night, as a lot of the world was tuning in that era every Monday night to either TNT or to see two guys we're talking about tonight over on the USA Network. Tonight we're discussing one of the greatest rivalries that transcends not only the squared circle, but also had a huge impact in pop culture in the late 90s into the early 2000s and really even on into today. Tonight we are talking the great one, the biggest, highest paid, hardest working man in Hollywood right now, The Rock, versus the Texas Rattlesnake, who has a lot of catchphrases that I can't repeat on this show because we are a family-friendly show. I will be limited tonight, but I will do the best I can. But it's The Rock versus Stone Cold Steve Austin. Mr. Elrod, you are our special guest referee in this showdown. Anything you want to say before the bell rings, so to speak?
You've got to call me Little Nate tonight. Little Nate is my name.
Your hair is nowhere near as good to be called Little Nate.
This is a tough one for me. These are both probably my two favorite people from that era. I'm a WCW guy. And I started watching that. But when I started watching the WWF, The Rock and Stone Cold Steve Austin were my favorite ones. I don't have a favorite. So this is perfect for me. This is perfect. So it's going to be a good episode.
Let's do it.
Let's do it.
Up to you, Mr. Elrod. What kind of one-sided shenanigans do we have tonight for me to lose this opening tip?
The last time that I tried a math thing, it ended miserably because I didn't know that Ben actually knew the number. So we're going to make this a little tougher tonight.
Unlike you, he researches his topics.
You got pen and paper. You ready? You have 10 seconds to write a number down.
10 seconds.
The Rock made his debut at WrestleMania 13.
That's incorrect.
In 1996.
This is true.
That's incorrect.
23rd, 1996.
That was his first Mania. That wasn't his debut.
For his first match.
WrestleMania.
It wasn't his first match. He survived. He debuted at Survivor Series 96.
Well, his first WrestleMania match.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I meant. Yeah. See, this is already off the rails. His first WrestleMania match, WrestleMania 13. His last appearance at WrestleMania was in 32 on April 3rd of 2016. So here's the top. Here is going to determine who goes first. From March 23rd, 1997 to April 3rd, 2016, how many seconds in terms of time is between those two intervals? Write down your number.
Say that again.
Yeah.
How many seconds from March 23rd, 1997 to April 3rd, 2016? That spans those years. How many seconds? It's a large number. It's a very large number. Time's up.
Hang on. That's a very large number.
Well, the answer is 600,566,400 seconds. It's a large number. I told you it'd be large. So let me see your numbers. Let me see your numbers. Too. Yeah. Okay. 827 million.
I went 316 billion.
Bennett, I think you have prevailed.
Bennett went billion too.
How?
Wait a minute.
That's billion.
Is that billion? Oh, so Rudd has it. Okay. You both have billions. I did not see that.
Can you do anything without trying to screw me over on this show?
I will try. So, Rod, would you like to go first or second tonight?
I will defer.
Defer.
Mr. Bennett.
All right.
All right. Bennett, let's get this thing started. All right. I would like to open up this debate with a question for you. When you hear the name Dwayne Johnson, what would be the very first thing that you think of? Go ahead.
The Rock.
It doesn't matter what you think about Dwayne Johnson because he is the most electrifying man in sports entertainment. He is the people's champ. And tonight, I will convince you that he is the great one.
Oh my God.
I like it. Is that it? I love
That's it.
It, baby. I love it. That was really nice. Tough act to follow. So, Sir Rutt, what do you have to say?
Wow. I'm thrown completely off. That was beautiful. Professional wrestling has had a stigma pretty much since its creation. It's for rednecks. It's for unintelligent people. Nobody watches that fake wrestling stuff. But there have been a select few guys that have transcended beyond the world of professional wrestling and become household names in different eras. In the 50s, when the television set came out, Gorgeous George made professional wrestling a household thing. And he made himself a household name that went beyond just the wrestling crowd. In the 1980s, when cable television came around, Hulkamania was running wild, brother. And Hulk Hogan, along with that MTV rock and wrestling connection, along with the invention of WrestleMania, Hulk Hogan became a pop culture icon far beyond just the wrestling scene and became a household name. And then in the late 90s, starting kind of in 96, picking up a lot of steam in 97, and solidifying itself in 1998, there was one sound that could take a person sitting in a packed arena from their butt to standing and yelling, and could make two kids sitting at home like myself and Mr. Bennett get extremely excited. And all that was the sound of a glass break. And you knew that something was about to go down. The man that single-handedly took charge and took over and won the Monday Night Wars against Elrod's Widow WCW.
NWO.
The Rock was a big part of it. But the man leading that fight was none other than the Texas Rattlesnake, Stone Cold Steve Austin. And I will tell you why tonight. While The Rock has had unarguably greater success after wrestling, but if we're looking at the wrestling world, The Rock comes nowhere close to Stone Cold Steve Austin. And if you want to hear me say it, give me a heck yeah.
Heck yeah.
I assume everybody out there watching did it. So continue.
All right. So let's start it off. But tell me about Stone Cold Steve Austin's life before he got inside of the ring.
Steve Williams was born on December 18th, 1964. No, but we won't do that. Fast forward to college life, much like Mr. Bennett's client tonight, except on a much smaller scale, Steve Austin, who's known as Steve Williams at the time, played Division I football as a defensive lineman. He was a defensive and nose tackle for the North Texas Mean Green. Actually, that may not have been Division I then. They are now. But he played for them. Pro football was not in his future. But he was a big fan of wrestling growing up. He's told a story on his podcast multiple times of loving wrestling as a kid and wondering, asking his mom as a kid that when he was watching wrestling from the famous Dallas Sportatorium, he didn't understand why the security guard wouldn't get in there and help Dusty Rhodes, who was getting his butt kicked. He didn't understand, but he was a fan of the business. Saw an ad on TV for a wrestling school at the world-famous Dallas Sportatorium, taught by gentleman Chris Adams, a huge top star in Dallas at the time. Austin attended the wrestling school, was the only person from his class to ever really make it, and started out in world-class championship wrestling before he came to the USWA, based right here in the great state of Tennessee. And for a year or so, stunning Steve Austin made his name throughout Memphis, throughout Nashville, And as far, at least as far as I know, he could have wrestled closer to us, but I know he had one particularly bad match in Lebanon, Tennessee, in 1990 when he was very much a newcomer. But from there, Stunning Steve found his way to the WCW, where he made a name for himself as a part of the Dangerous Alliance. With Arn Anderson, with Bobby Eaton, with Ravishing Rick Rude, Larry Zbysko. He became one half of one of probably the most underrated tag teams ever with Brian Pillman in the Hollywood Blondes. He had two runs with the U.S. title, two runs with the TV title, but Austin had this stigma in WCW that he was never going to be a top guy. They saw him as a great worker, but he was never going to be a top guy, much like for wrestling fans out there today, somebody in that Dolph Ziggler role, somebody that's a great worker that people are going to love, but they're never going to be that top guy. That's how he was viewed in WCW. He was bitten by some injuries, which is a theme basically throughout his entire career, and was fired while out suffering from a torn tricep. Because they just didn't see any long-term value with him. He went for a cup of coffee in ECW with his old Dangerous Alliance partner, Paul E. Dangerously, later to be known as Paul Heyman, basically where he learned to cut a promo. I'd say he got pretty good at it. And then from there, was signed by none other than the, at the time, World Wrestling Federation, where I'll tell the rest of the story shortly.
All right. Well, thank you, sir. Right. Bennett, tell me about the great one in his life before the WWF.
Well, before WWF, Mr. Johnson was actually a standout athlete in high school. Fun fact about high school, he attended Glencliff and McGavick High School.
Hmm.
Although he didn't graduate here from Nashville, he has some ties here in Tennessee. He accepted a full ride scholarship to play football for Miami. Bleh. Ooh. And he played defensive tackle for them. 1991, he was part of that undefeated Hurricanes team that won the national championship. And but injury bug also got him a lot in college. And he would actually go on to be replaced by another gentleman that's a Hall of Fame member, Mr. Warren Sapp. So after his graduation with Miami, he didn't get drafted, went undrafted, but he did sign on with the Calgary Stampedes for the Canadian Football League. 2 months into that season, though, he was released. So then that's when he decided that he would kind of follow in the footsteps of his father and his grandfather, and he began to train to become a professional wrestler in the WWF, now WWE.
All right. Well, now that we've got the background information for each of these people, Bennett, tell me about the initial WWF gimmick that The Rock had when he came.
Well, when he debuted in WWF in 1996, his gimmick, he went by the name of Rocky Maivia, which is a combination of his father and his grandfather's in-ring names. And he was immediately played up as, you know, the first third-generation wrestler in the WWF. And he was a face, and pretty much ownership immediately pushed him from the get-go. His first match was not at WrestleMania, like the confusion we had earlier. It was in November 17th of 1996 at Survivor Series. Mr. Rutherford got that one right. He won an 8-man elimination tag team match. And then by February of 97, he had won the Intercontinental Championship, which was a bigger deal back at the time. It was actually, even though it wasn't like the biggest belt, having the Intercontinental belt was a big deal. He defeated Triple H for that title. There it is. Look at that. Hmm. His first WrestleMania, came that same year where he defended his Intercontinental title. But by this time, the fans were kind of starting to turn on him a little bit. They were getting kind of bored of his gimmick. And they would actually start chanting, "Die, Rocky, die," and "Rocky sucks." So, it's crazy. So what did The Rock do? He turned heel. He joined the Nation of Domination. He stopped going by the Rocky Maivia name and instead started referring to himself just as The Rock. And this is kind of where he began to develop into his trademark self that we know him as. He began to, like, mock the audience and mock his fellow wrestlers there. And he was well on his way by then to becoming one of the greatest ever on the mic. It was also around this time that he started telling people to know their role and shut their mouth.
All right, Rutt. Tell me about Stone Cold's initial gimmick in the WWF.
When Steve Austin joined the WWF in January of 95, he came in as this fantastic push to the moon Stone Cold character, except he didn't. He came in as the Ringmaster. A very boring, a very, very bland gimmick. He had a clean-shaven face. He had a little bit of hair on his head. And they put him with the Million Dollar Corporation, the Million Dollar Man, Ted DiBiase, and gave him the Million Dollar Championship. Just handed it to him. But it wasn't very far into this run that Austin realized that this gimmick sucked. And I think the world realized that this gimmick sucked. So, basically, on his own accord, he started growing out a goatee. And he shaved his head in a look that he still sports to this day because it's kind of iconic. And he also wanted to get rid of that stupid Ringmaster name. So, WWE Creative tried to go to bat for him, and Creative Services sent over a bunch of names, and I don't remember what all of them were suggested, but I do remember one of them, Chili McFreaks. True story, we could have had Chili McFreaks Steve Austin, but on his own accord, based on a comment that his wife made, his wife at that time made, while they were sitting at home and a light bulb went off, he decided he was going to become Stone Cold Steve Austin in March when he just debuted in January. So the Ringmaster gimmick didn't last very long, but I think the whole Stone Cold thing stuck a little bit better. And we'll get into that more after Elrod transitions here.
Well, you kind of alluded to this. Eventually, these people shedded these gimmicks and became superstars and icons. So tell me about the breakout moment for the Ringmaster, Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Well, the breakout moment was for the Ringmaster was changing his name to Stone Cold. but the when you really think of it, the Austin has two breakout moments. The moment that he showed he was more, because when he was brought in, they brought him in as more of a mechanic. For those of you that aren't huge wrestling fans, somebody that's a great worker that helps get your other guys over. And that's kind of the role he was brought in to be. He wasn't brought in and kind of pushed to the moon and down people's throats. Like The Rock was. He was brought in just to kind of help get other guys over. But they saw something in him when he switched to this Stone Cold character. And at King of the Ring 96, which ironically enough was supposed to be won by the man Hunter Hearst Helmsley, who would go on to become Triple H. But due to some getting in trouble involved with Kevin Nash and Scott Hall's defection to the other group down south, the person left to punish was Triple H, and he did not win the King of the Ring that year, but Stone Cold won the King of the Ring that year. And while winning King of the Ring is a big deal, the actual winning wasn't Stone Cold's breakout moment. It was his time on the microphone after winning. It was the promo he cut after winning that really took Stone Cold Steve Austin and started Austin 316. He just defeated Jake Roberts, who had cut a religious-based promo on him earlier in the evening. And I think I can quote this verbatim. I'm going to try. Austin got on the mic, and as Jake walked past him to go back to the back, Austin told him, he said, "You thump your Bible, you quote your Psalms, you quote your John 3:16. Well, Austin 3:16 says, "I just whipped your..." And he just said it off the top of his head. But then the next night on Monday Night Raw, there were Austin 3:16 signs in the crowd everywhere. And everywhere they went for the next couple weeks, there were Austin 3:16 signs in the crowd. Because of this, Austin got his first T-shirt, which said Austin 3:16 on it. It was one of their top-selling shirts of all time, and that's really what put him on the map. And what solidified him as a top guy came at the WrestleMania you were talking about earlier, WrestleMania 13. And most guys become top guys when they have a huge win, but at WrestleMania 13, Steve Austin lost. But he lost in an I Quit match. In one of the most iconic scenes in WrestleMania history, a lot of people will call his submission match with Bret Hart one of the greatest WrestleMania matches of all time. And it's the iconic image with Austin's head busted open, blood pouring down his face in Bret Hart's sharpshooter that no one had ever gotten out of. But Austin refused to quit, and he passed out from the pain and the blood loss. So he lost by default, but he never gave up. And that night, not only did Stone Cold go from being a heel or a bad guy to one of the most loved guys in the company, that was the start of the most over wrestler of our generation that has still, John Cena has touched a lot of people, but that moment was the beginning of Stone Cold Steve Austin becoming the most over wrestler, the most loved wrestler of this generation.
All right. Bennett, tell me about the breakout moment for the great one.
For his breakout moment, I'm actually going with a match that he lost. But to me, it seemed like the SummerSlam of 98 in a ladder match versus Hunter Hearst Helmsley for the Intercontinental title was his breakout moment. Interestingly enough, this was at Madison Square Garden, which was the same arena that he had made his debut just 2 years ago. At the time, he was a heel. He was a hated heel. And he had become the leader by this time of the Nation of Domination. And up to that point, he was considered like an up-and-coming rising star. He'd already established himself with the people's eyebrow, and he already had some catchphrases, and he was starting to get pretty good on the mic, but he lacked that just defining moment in the ring. Well, that is until that evening. He showed signs of aggression, signs of ruthlessness that the audience really hadn't seen from him before. He was targeting Triple H's knee throughout the match, and he would use the ladder to dish out punishment. And he even took a blade to the forehead to give the match some color, which I don't really remember The Rock doing much of in his career. Got to keep that face, you know. This was very well received by the audience that night, and they actually started chanting "Rocky" instead of "Rocky sucks." One could argue that The Rock was actually the better wrestler that night instead of Triple H, and probably should have got the victory had China not interfered with the match. Mm. Not only was this match in conversation for the best match of 98, but it was often cited as one of the greatest ladder matches of all time, and it showcased two people that were really up-and-coming stars at the time. And even though that he lost the match that night, he kind of won on the bigger scale because it was kind of like his announcement to the business that he was no longer like the future of the industry. He was the present of the industry.
All right. Well, we've talked about the start. We talked about the breakout moments. Now, The Rock and Stone Cold became, for the WWF, became the staples. So tell me, Bennett, tell me about the main event runs that The Rock had during this time period.
Well, The Rock had one of the greatest main event runs in professional wrestling history. During his superstar run, which was, I'd say, like 98 through 03, he feuded with several of the industry's biggest names, including DX, The Undertaker, Chris Jericho, Kurt Angle, Mankind, Triple H, and, of course, Stone Cold Steve Austin. 98's really when he started to establish himself as one of the bigger names in the Attitude Era with his charisma and electrifying persona he had. And in 99, WWF debuted SmackDown, which aired on Thursday nights to compete with your WCW. The Rock called it his show because SmackDown is one of his catchphrases. And SmackDown's still around now, you know, 20-plus years later. Also, speaking of SmackDown, they had the SmackDown video game for, I think that was for PlayStation. So you had The Rock on the – he shared the cover with a few people on SmackDown and SmackDown 2. And then after that, he had SmackDown Just Bring It, which is another one of Rock's catchphrases. All these were video games just for him. And also, too, he was on the WWE 2K14, even though he hadn't wrestled with the company on a full-time basis for over 10 years. He's been part of some of the highest-rated segments and events in WWE history. On one episode of Monday Night Raw, there was a segment called This Is Your Life. I know Rutt remembers this one. Basically, it's like a 20-minute segment where they have all these people that came out that were influential or like loved ones from his life, and he just like dogs and disses every single one of them. It's great. Basically, from that on, he became pretty much must-see TV. At his peak, he was the main event in the most bought pay-per-view worldwide, which was WrestleMania 28. It's also one of the best matches on the most bought domestic pay-per-view, which was WrestleMania 17. He was the main event on the highest rated Raw episode of all time, which got an 8.1. And on the WWE SmackDown in 2002 when he defeated Kurt Angle.
Before I give you the opportunity to talk, Andy, Bennett, do you remember when the last time the Sacramento Kings were relevant, which I think was 2002, when The Rock cut the Rock concert there in Sacramento, and the loudest, angriest crowd I can ever remember watching a wrestling event was when The Rock said, basically, all you are ugly, and when the Lakers come in May or something like that, that crowd lost it. He could captivate an audience unlike anybody. Andy, tell me about the main event runs for Stone Cold now.
Just to short sidetrack before I do that, the This Is Your Life segment, which was a fantastic segment, was kind of quote-unquote hosted by Mick Foley, who we want to thank greatly for that video he did for our page this week. Probably, definitely the most seen video we've put out there. Literally thousands of people, which kind of blows my mind, watched that video. So thank you to the hardcore legend and WWE Hall of Famer, Mr. Foley. But back to the task at hand. You know, Austin had – he won the King of the Ring in 96. He won the Royal Rumble in 97. He had that match with Bret Hart at WrestleMania where he lost, but really put him over the top. That's when Austin slowly got things rolling. And then he went into SummerSlam against Owen Hart in 97 for this title. And a botched move in that match broke Austin's neck. Mm-hmm. Now, a broken neck, he still won the match, surprisingly enough. But a broken neck for a lot of guys would be the end. And they would go home until that was healed. Austin missed no TV time. He didn't wrestle for a few months, but he was on TV every Monday night, and that's really where the main event run started. And he carried that momentum into January when he was able to get in the ring again, and he won his second consecutive Royal Rumble. And the very next night on Raw, where Steve Austin made himself a household name, was when Mike Tyson was on Monday Night Raw. Mike Tyson, who in 1997, or 98, well, 97 too, but in January of 98, one of the biggest names in the world, one of the most controversial figures in the world. He had bitten off Holyfield's ear at this point. And Tyson was a big deal. And Stone Cold Steve Austin rolled to the ring, gave Mike Tyson the bird, and ensued a brawl. That really was the genesis of the feud that would make Stone Cold Steve Austin a household name. Not a feud with another wrestler, but a feud with one Vincent Kennedy McMahon. So Stone Cold went on that year WrestleMania to win, and the last appearance of this belt, the most beautiful belt that the World Wrestling Federation ever produced, Austin defeated Shawn Michaels that night.
That hurt.
On that sad, sad, depressing night in 1998. And the very next night, on an even sadder occasion, they debuted a new belt. But from that point forward, the feud with Austin and McMahon that spanned for 3 years, that had different guys stepping into the ring with Austin on McMahon's behalf, whether that be Mick Foley as Dude Love, whether that be Kane, whether that be The Undertaker, or whether that be the corporate champion himself, The Rock. That feud between Austin and McMahon is what made Stone Cold Steve Austin a household name, because at the time when we're kids, and this is not something that our parents should be proud of, and myself now as a parent would not be proud of with my kid, but going back to our childhood, there's this guy coming out saying curse words on national TV, flipping a bird willy-nilly, drinking beer on TV. But the thing that resonated with kids and with adults alike, he got to kick his boss square in the gut and give his boss a Stone Cold Stunner. And he got to do it every single week. No matter how much the boss tried to put him down, Austin always came out on top. And is that not the American dream? We all want to give our bosses a Stone Cold Stunner, or at least the finger that comes before it. He was one of the most relatable characters in the history of wrestling, not because we're all big tough guys that can go out and brawl our way, but the fact that he had the guts. He wasn't who we thought we were. He was who everybody wanted to be. But most importantly, during that main event run that lasted pretty much up until his retirement and the times when he was out hurt, there was a little war going on with the company down south in WCW. They had taken Kevin Nash. They had taken Scott Hall. There were several other guys that packed up their bags. Bret Hart packed up from the WWF and went down to WCW. Shawn Michaels got hurt and had to go home in the beginning of 98. They had The Undertaker, but the guy that had the load on his back, the guy, WWF was much closer than any of us probably realize, was very close to going under in 98, the beginning of 98, or at least in the middle of 97. That's why Bret Hart left. McMahon couldn't honor his contract. This company was close to going under and losing. But one man, The Rock, would go on to do great things, but The Rock was still on his way up at this time. Austin put the entire company on his back. Now, he had to have guys around him, but make no mistake, he was the main guy. He was the character. He was the household name. He was the captain of the team. And almost single-handedly, not only brought WWF out of impending bankruptcy, but put WCW out of business. The company that never saw him as the top guy, he was one of the main reasons to put them out of business.
My boy Bischoff should have kept him. Should have kept
him. Bischoff fired him via FedEx. Didn't even have the balls.
I don't fault him for that. I don't fault him. So, Andy, there's been three matches between The Rock and Stone Cold Steve Austin at the highest level, at WrestleMania, their trilogy of matches. So tell me about these matches with Stone Cold Steve Austin and The Rock.
Well, Rod, you deserve a nice swift kick in the gut and a stunner for not paying attention to the format changes we discussed in a text conversation. But I will discuss that trilogy of matches, but we're looking at WrestleMania in general. Because here's the thing, as big as Stone Cold Steve Austin was, do you know how many WrestleMania matches he had in his entire career?
Seven.
You cheated.
No, that's a total guess.
Well, for once, you guessed right. From 1996 until 2003, Stone Cold Steve Austin only had seven WrestleMania matches. His first one, WrestleMania 12, he was 2 months into the company. Had a really solid match with Savio Vega, another underrated guy. A match I rewatched today. Research for this show does not always suck. I rewatched that match today. Pretty solid match. But it all goes uphill from there. WrestleMania 13, I've already talked about it. The match with Bret Hart that put him on the map and sent a skyrocket straight up his butt and shot him into the atmosphere. WrestleMania 14 that I discussed earlier, where he defeated the Heartbreak Kid Shawn Michaels and won his first.
I know that hurts. I know it hurts.
Thanks to that dirty, rotten, backstabbing Mike Tyson. But then we go to WrestleMania 15, part one of the Austin versus Rock trilogy. The Rock comes in as champion because Austin had gotten screwed out of the title by those dastardly McMahons, and The Rock was their corporate champion, and Austin was coming back for vengeance to take down The Rock at WrestleMania 15. He got screwed out of the Royal Rumble by Vince McMahon, but he beat Vince McMahon in Memphis, Tennessee in February 14th, 1999, St. Valentine's Day Massacre. And he got a shot at The Rock in what was one of the most, another one of those iconic WrestleMania matches. Steve Austin that night becomes a three-time WWF World Champion. 2000, Austin was hurt, didn't compete at WrestleMania. 2001, part two of the Rock versus Austin trilogy that saw Austin once again win the title, but this time with the help of Mr. McMahon, and Austin turning heel in what was a completely stupid move that Austin backed out on a month later, and it never really panned out. But the match in and of itself, fantastic. WrestleMania 18. Austin's worst WrestleMania match by far was Scott Hall. I'm sure Bennett will discuss The Rock's match that night. that really stole the show. And then WrestleMania 19, the end of the trilogy, where The Rock finally defeats Steve Austin. But that was indeed Stone Cold Steve Austin's last match. That was his swan song. So he only had 7 WrestleMania matches in his career, but sans 2 of them, Savio Vega and Scott Hall. The others were, they may not have been the main event, but they were one of the more heavily promoted matches. And pretty much all the rest of them, except for those two, go down in WrestleMania history as some of the most iconic matches there were.
All right, but tell me about The Rock's WrestleMania moments, the great one.
My math is correct. The Rock was in 11 WrestleManias. His first, of course, I think I covered before, was WrestleMania 13 when he defeated the Sultan to retain his Intercontinental title. Of course, WrestleMania 15.
Not to cut you off, Bennett. Elrod, tell me who the Sultan became.
The Sultan?
Yes.
The Godfather.
No, someone whose rear end is as large as your head.
Rikishi.
Yes, okay, continue. Yes.
Then, of course, you know, we had WrestleMania 15, which, although The Rock did lose that match, that was the first time that The Rock was the main event of WrestleMania, so it's still a big deal for him. Again, like WrestleMania 17, like I said, the second time they faced off. This is regarded as the best match on what you could debate as one of the best WrestleManias. So even though The Rock did lose that one too, and it still speaks volumes about how good both of these guys were. Even though he got the loss, he's still considered the best match on arguably one of the best WrestleManias. WrestleMania 18. This one is referred to as Icon versus Icon. It was The Rock versus Hogan. It was an instant classic. Of all people, ESPN ranked this the number 8 WrestleMania match of all time. And The Rock got the victory, but it took 3 rock bottoms to take out Hogan. And interesting thing about that one, too, is at the beginning of it, if I'm correct, Rudd will have to help me. At the very beginning, the two are just standing there staring at each other, kind of sizing each other up. And that makes for one of, like, the most, like, iconic scenes, at least of this millennium as far as wrestling goes. You know, you think of, like, the stare down of, like, Hogan versus Andre the Giant, like at WrestleMania 3, you kind of have that same iconic scene there with them two just staring at each other. And after the match was over, even though Hogan lost, Hogan actually kind of turned face after that, and which was the first time that Hogan had turned face in a long time since before his NWO run, I'm thinking, if that's right. WrestleMania 19 was his final match with Austin, which was Austin's final match, like Rudd said, and Rock got the victory there. So it shows that doesn't matter how you start the WrestleMania match with Austin, it's how you finish. Okay, moving on. He had another match. This one was interesting. I had to put this one in. I don't want to go through every single one of them. We'll be here a while. But WrestleMania 32, he had, if you want to call it a match, versus Eric Rowan. The Rock won in 7 seconds, which set a WrestleMania record. And then real quick, honorable mention, WrestleMania 28 and WrestleMania 29 with John Cena. Those are really good matches too. 28, I believe, Rock won, and then in 29, Cena won.
Well, both of these guys, in some form or fashion, have left the WWE at certain points. They've come back. So tell me, Bennett, tell me about the post. This is going to take a while if you go through it all. But tell me about the post WWE work for Dwayne Johnson.
Okay, I've got like 10 pages of notes here to go through. I'm just kidding. I'm going to make this quick as I can. Outside of him being one of the biggest stars in the ring, he has found just as much, if not more, success outside of the ring. He's a highly successful actor. He's also a writer, a producer, and a businessman. He, believe it or not, he is one of the most successful actors of this millennium. And while he had acted some, a little bit, while he was still wrestling, whenever he left in 2004, he went to pursue acting full-time. He starred in numerous movies. I think it's upwards of 36 movies he's been in. He's probably known most for his work with the Fast and the Furious films. Other than the big screen, he's also starred in HBO series Ballers, which he also produced, and that lasted for 5 seasons. In 2000, he released an autobiography called The Rock Says, and this was a New York Times bestseller. His movies have combined for a gross $4 billion domestically and $10 billion worldwide. That's crazy. 2019, Forbes listed him as the number one highest paid actor, and then in 2018 he was the number two highest paid actor. And little fun fact too, his Instagram account has 184 million followers, which puts him fourth most in the entire world. So that just goes to show that he is as talented, entertaining both inside the ring as he is outside the ring.
That's about 10 more than me that I have on Instagram. Okay. So, Sir Wright, tell me about Stone Cold Steve Austin's life post-WWE. Didn't he leave because of an injury that he had?
He had a lot of injuries, and that was the story of his career, and I'll kind of get into that momentarily. His body couldn't take it anymore. It was time to hang him up. Now, you may look at what The Rock is today and what he's become, but I'm going to tell you something. Stone Cold has done just as much and been just as good when it comes to writing books. He released a book called The Stone Cold Truth in 2001, which was also a New York Times bestseller. So we're going to call that one a push. Obviously, he's not one of the more higher paid guys in Hollywood like Mr. Rock Johnson is, but he's been in some movies. He's been in some WWE films. Most notably, he was in The Longest Yard and he was in the first Expendables movie. So nothing to sneeze at. He's not the hardest working man in Hollywood, but it's nothing to sneeze at. He's also become kind of a TV staple as a host. He hosted one of WWE seasons of Tough Enough, but then he went on with CMT to host Redneck Island. He hosted the Broken Skull Challenge on CMT. Most recently, he hosted Straight Up Steve Austin on the USA Network. So, yeah, he's not in all these blockbuster mega million-dollar movies, but he's done pretty well for himself and kept his name going in his post WWE life, and he still pops in on WWE TV every now and then to drink a few beers in the ring and say a few whats, which is the worst thing he ever did. Maybe give a stunner here or there. So no, he's not The Rock. I'm not even going to argue that category, but he's done fairly well for himself on a smaller scale in his post-WWE life.
So he's not raking in billions, though. Like
no, but Dwayne. I'd say he's got a few mil.
Right, tell me about the legacy of Stone Cold Steve Austin.
I think the legacy of Steve Austin is this, in that he put wrestling on the map in one of its biggest boom periods ever. He was the face of the Monday Night Wars. It was basically the two guy, bald-headed guys with goatees. You had Austin on one channel. You had Goldberg on the other of must-see Monday Night television that took over not only wrestling fans, but there were college campuses all over the world, or all over the country. Maybe the world's a bit of a stretch, but that used to throw wrestling parties every Monday night. This was a phenomenon that this era, I'll speak for myself. I've been a wrestling fan my entire life. There were times when it wasn't exactly cool to be a wrestling fan. As I get older, and probably even today, it's not that cool to be a wrestling fan. But in the late 90s, I've kind of felt like I was on an elevated platform because everybody was coming to join me in what I love to do. And the face of that was Steve Austin. His legacy is the guy that was the face of the company, that carried the company from the edge of bankruptcy to putting their competitor out of business. He was a household name, and he was a guy that, as we look back, I talked about his injuries. He got fired from WCW because he tore his tricep. The night he won the Intercontinental title in 97, he broke his neck in the match. He had to have a knee surgery that kept him out for over a year, was why he missed WrestleMania 2000. He had another neck and back issue that forced him to retire at the end of WrestleMania 19. His legacy is going to be that he was the face of a company that really had his career cut short probably 10 or 15 years. And we won't know how – Stone Cold is one of the most recognizable names ever, and we'll never know how big that name could have gotten if his body would have held up. So shortened by injuries, but still one of the greatest careers we're ever going to see. That's his legacy.
And it came about the legacy of Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
For The Rock, the term people's champion really defines his career. What started out as like a cocky one-liner when he first started out, when he first started saying that, really grew into a role that he took on very seriously and was very successful at. Even today, he remains one of the most beloved and accomplished wrestlers of all time. He was known to talk the talk, but he could also walk the walk. He was a two-time Intercontinental Champion, a five-time Tag Team Champion. He was a Royal Rumble winner. He was a 10-time World Champion, and he was their sixth Triple Crown winner, which people that don't know, the Triple Crown is when you have the Intercontinental title, you also win the Tag Team title, and you're a WWE champion. So you'd gotten all three belts, basically. I think this is a testament to his determination to become one of the greatest of all time. He was able to kind of climb out of the shadows that his father and grandfather kind of had before him. Instead of just being, oh, you know, it's his grandson or it's his son, he kind of grew out of that to become his own person. And you could argue that The Rock was just as big at that time as Stone Cold was, and was one of the faces of the company that was full. They had a stacked roster full of really, really talented people. And this was also at the height, like Mr. Rutt said, is as popular as it was at that time. Rock was right there just as popular as Stone Cold was.
All right. I've got two questions. This one is just for you, Bennett. What would you say to those who say, I would venture to say this, people that are younger than me, that are in the 25 age group and lower now, what would you say to those who say The Rock, Dwayne Johnson, his actual name is more recognizable than The Rock in his work as a wrestler. Like some people that are younger than us that have never watched wrestling just see The Rock as Dwayne Johnson. What would you say to those people that see him more as an actor than a wrestler in his career now?
To me, even when I see like Dwayne Johnson in a movie, I'm like, hey, The Rock's starring in that. And I've actually seen where people advertise that, you know, Dwayne The Rock Johnson will be starring in this movie. Maybe not, they not put it out there on the, like on the credits. But to me, I'd have a hard time really understanding somebody that would not know that he, that who Dwayne Johnson is as The Rock. Cause you know, just his presence on social media. I think also too, he has a hashtag that he uses a lot. I don't know if it's Lay If The Smack Is Down or something like that. So he keeps himself relevant even today. So even somebody that may have not watched wrestling in the 90s will be like, what the heck is he talking about? I just know this guy's an actor. And maybe they go and look it up and be like, oh, okay, cool. You know, he did this, he did that. So I think he finds a way to kind of keep his whole identity and his whole brand to the forefront, because I don't think you want to spend that much of your time as being The Rock and then just kind of cut it off and then, okay, now I'm just going to be known as this.
Yeah. Quick question for both of you. Keep it short. I'm going to start with you, Andy. The best Stone Cold Steve Austin promo was blank.
Oh, King of the Ring 96. The promo that put Austin 316 on the map. I'll say it again, just for fun. As Jake Roberts walks by, you thump your Bibles, you talk about your Psalms, you talk about John 3:16. Austin 3:16 says, I just whipped your...
We're going to get him to say it here in a minute. I want to make you keep on repeating.
This is a family-friendly show.
Bennett, tell me this. The best Rock promo was blank.
It's hard for me not to go, even though this wasn't necessarily a promo per se, even the segment of This Is Your Life that Mr. Mick Foley put on, in of itself, it was like a 20-minute promo just because of, if you go back and watch this thing, they had so many people that come out that were, like I said, influential people, and he's just like dogging these people, and it's so memorable. I have to go with that being his biggest promo. To me.
All right. Bennett, you have the floor. Close it out for us. Why should I choose The Rock over Stone Cold Steve Austin?
When you reflect on The Rock's career, you may think of a super talented athlete in the ring that knew how to sell the bumps. And he would also electrify the arena with his signature moves like Rock Bottom and the People's Elbow. You may think of him with the epic encounters and feuds that he had over the years, especially with Stone Cold. That was his biggest feud, I think. You may also think of The Rock. You may think of his hilarious catchphrases and one-liners that he would do on the mic. Regardless of any of those things, one thing about The Rock was that he was always evolving himself, whether that be turning heel to face to heel, or which next catchphrase he would come out with that they would slap on a t-shirt real quick and you'd see the signs immediately out in the crowd the very next week. To me, The Rock was three things. He was entertaining. He was charismatic, and he was memorable. So to me, that's a reason why The Rock is not only the people's champ, but he is also convinced me's champ.
When did you get a belt?
Thank you, Corey Campbell.
Bennett's on fire tonight. He's on fire with his opening and his closing. So, Andy, tell me why Stone Cold Steve Austin's better than the great one.
Well, any good closing argument, what? It's just what? Like any good wrestling promo. What? You tell what are the good things about you or your guy, what? And then you put down the other guy, what? Okay, that was stupid when Austin did it. Even more stupid when I did it. But just like a good wrestling promo, you go through your own achievements. And I'm going to keep this quick and very list-like. He was WWF champion 6 times. He was the WWF Intercontinental champion twice. He was a WWF Tag Team Champion 4 times. He was the King of the Ring. He was the only 3-time Royal Rumble winner. He was the 5th Triple Crown Champion. And he was inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame in 2009. Well, that's all well and good. Those are all Vince McMahon's decisions. But if you look at from Pro Wrestling Illustrated, one of the most illustrious wrestling publications, Feud of the Year, 98-99, Match of the Year, 97, Most Popular Wrestler of the Year, 98, Rookie of the Year, 1990, Wrestler of the Year, 98, 99, and 2000, and was number one on the PWI 500 in 98 and 99. He was inducted into the Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame in 2016, and then the Wrestling Observer Newsletter, which is fan-given awards, Best Box Office Draw, 98 and 99. Best Brawler, Best Gimmick, Best Heel, Best on Interviews, Best Non-Wrestler when he came back after he stopped wrestling. Feud of the Year, Match of the Year, Rookie of the Year, Tag Team of the Year with Brian Pillman and the Hollywood Blondes, Wrestler of the Year, and in 2000 he was inducted into the Wrestling Observer Hall of Fame. The Rock was and is, continues to be, an icon in the wrestling business. But if you've got to put The Rock down anywhere, it's right here. The Rock made his name as the top guy when Stone Cold was either hurt or Stone Cold was gone. And the only other times he was top of the card was when he was in the ring with Stone Cold. He was a solid guy, and as a solid number two was better than the number one of 98% of other eras. But the fact is, The Rock was, when it comes to the wrestling business, number two until Austin went home. The Rock wins Hollywood, hands down. He is the hardest working man in Hollywood. But Stone Cold Steve Austin owns professional wrestling. And that's the bottom line, because myself and Stone Cold's record and his legacy says so.
You know, I've said this in the other two things I've mediated. This was a close one, but this is the closest one we've had so far, because here is my internal conflict that I'm having to weigh. I was a WCW guy. I remember being 7 or 8, watching WCW, watching those guys. And I think it was on the USA Network. I think that's where Raw was back in – is that right? USA Network? Okay. I remember flipping over, and I think it was a segment between McMahon and Stone Cold, the first one I watched. And McMahon is in a hospital bed, and he's talking, and this doctor comes around and starts just beating the crap out of him. At age 7 or 8, I thought that was the greatest thing ever. And seeing The Rock, I never had a favorite between The Rock and Stone Cold. I love them equally. I felt like we're kind of robbed with Stone Cold, not having those years, his body being battered due to injuries. I mean, if he had stayed healthy, I don't think there's any doubt that he's the greatest of all time with the accolades he would have today. I love The Rock. I loved his matches with John Cena. But you can't go against a Texas Rattlesnake. You just can't do it. I've got to make a decision, and I've decided that Stone Cold Steve Austin carries the night, unfortunately. I love The Rock. The Rock is probably going to come and lack down, and then you will as well on me, but I've got to go with Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Oh, heck yeah. Now, Elrod, you've been a great moderator tonight, but I've got to give you a virtual stunner now. Boom.
Oh.
Sell it. Take a virtual stunner. Did it? Take a virtual stunner. Boom. And this is how we're going to roll right here tonight. Because Austin wins, as always. This is a family-friendly show. Oh, heck yes.
Oh, my gosh. Is it time to change my mind? Because I want to see what Bennett would do here. What would you do if you had won tonight? Did you have a gimmick that you were going to do?
I don't have nothing.
Oh,
I'm gimmicked out.
Oh,
maybe get up and do a people's elbow. I don't know.
Just so you all know, my wife is going to kill me now.
Oh, she is. She's about to give you a stunner.
Probably so. Anyway, thank you guys for joining us. I have to go dry off now.
That was impressive.
That's awesome.
I'm all wet. gentlemen, wow. Guys, thanks for hanging out with us. This has been a long one. I think that was a heck of a payoff. Gentlemen, any parting words before we head on out?
Well, as bad as I hate to say it, Rod, you have convinced me that the Stone Cold is better than The Rock. As bad as I hate to say it.
Bennett?
Boo.
Boo.
Bunch of jabronis.
It doesn't matter what you think.
Well, everybody, thanks for joining us. I'm going to go dry off. Make sure, pay attention to our Facebook page. I'll let you know what's going on. When the podcast drops, go subscribe, go like it, go leave us 5-star reviews. Be sure that you check that out. Support us the best way you can, and I'll keep dousing myself in water. Not sure what next week's episode will be, but we'll let you know on the page when we know. But either way, it's going to be entertaining. Be back to join us. For Mr. Elrod, for Mr. Bennett, I'm Andy Rutherford. I have convinced Mr. Elrod again, and hopefully we convinced you to come back next week. We'll see you then. Peace.